This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello and welcome. This is Colleen O'Grady, the host of the Power Your Parenting Moms to Teens podcast. This is a gathering place for moms of preteens, teens, and young adults. My mission is to first and foremost support and encourage you, mom, so that you can live well and reclaim your life. Two, this show will help you have the best possible relationships with your teens so that you can communicate, motivate, and guide them effectively and actually enjoy them. And third, I will bring you top-notch guests who will share the newest in adolescent research and trends so you can be prepared and aware of what your teens are facing today. Always, you will leave each episode armed with practical parenting tips. Welcome back, everyone, to the 264th episode of Power Your Parenting Moms to Teens podcast. I'm Colleen O'Grady, the host of the show. I am so grateful for all of you faithful listeners. I love sharing my content with you week after week, but I also would love a chance to meet you and get to know you more. So on Friday, May 3rd, I'm having a free F-R-E-E, one-hour meetup on Zoom, and I'm calling it Ask Colleen, which is my name, and I will answer your questions. So any question about parenting tweens, teens, young adults, and especially if you have a teen that's about to graduate from high school, and you're wondering what's next or what to expect. So I'm here for you on May 3rd. So once you register, you can send me your question so that you can have some privacy. And it's going to be so fun to see your faces. So invite your friends, and you can share this link, Colleen O'Grady, two L's, two E's. So it's colleenogrady.com/askcolleen. I know you know me as the host of the Power Your Parenting podcast, but I've also been a licensed therapist for 30 years with 50,000 hours of talking to parents, teens, and young adults. And yes, that is a lot of hours. All right, we're going to dive into the episode. So were you raised by a narcissistic parent, or did you marry a narcissist? How do you raise kids to not be narcissistic? What are the harmful effects of parental narcissism, and how do you heal from that? Dr. Carol McBride is our guest today. Carol McBride, PhD, LMFT, is a licensed marriage and family therapist, just like me. She's in Denver, Colorado, with 39 plus years of public and private practice. She specializes in treating clients with dysfunctional family issues. For the past many years, Dr. McBride has been involved in private research regarding parental narcissism and the debilitating effects of narcissism in relationships. She has treated many adult children of narcissistic parents, as well as many others involved in relationships with narcissists in her private practice. Dr. McBride is considered a pioneer and leading expert in her field. Dr. McBride has also extensive clinical experience in the fields of trauma, sexual abuse, domestic violence, divorce, and stepfamily therapy, marital and family therapy, and specialized trauma treatment like eye movement, desensitization, reprocessing, otherwise known as EMDR. So welcome, Dr. Carol McBride.
Hi, Colleen. It's nice to be here with you.
Yes. So the first question that I ask all my guests is, are you a mom? And if so, what are the ages of your kids?
Oh, yes, I am. And this will show my age, but my children are 50 and 53, have grandchildren, 20, 22, 13, and 11.
Wow. Now, I know you're in Colorado. Do they live close by?
They do.
Well, that's nice.
Yes, it is. One crew lives about 3 hours away, but everybody's in Colorado.
So I know that you've written three books, and your newest book is called Will the Drama Ever End? Untangling and Healing for the Harmful Effects of Parental Narcissism. So can you tell us why you wrote the book?
I have been studying narcissism since the early 2000s and started out with my first book, which really focused on mothers and daughters, healing the daughters of narcissistic mothers. And then as that book progressed, I was getting a lot of questions about, well, what if I grew up with a narcissistic parent and then I married a narcissist? And we were also getting a lot of cases in my practice of these high conflict, very contentious divorces where people were divorcing a narcissist, and that was creating all kinds of problems in the legal system and in their families and for their children. So my second book is Will I Ever Be Free of You? High Conflict Divorce from a Narcissist. And this book led me into, as I'm dealing with all of these different issues from the first two books, people working through their trauma from having a narcissistic parent, but then realizing that now they have to go back and address the narcissism and or just the problems from growing up in that family with their siblings, with their extended family, sometimes with the enabling parent that is married to the narcissistic parent, and it can be the mom or the dad. So then I moved into family dynamics, which is really what the third book is about. If you come from a family that I call the narcissistic family, which what I really mean by that is led by a narcissistic parent.
Well, I think my listeners would be interested in like every one of your books because I listen to my audience. So these are great resources. Can you explain what narcissism is and what a narcissistic parent looks like?
Yes, I think it's very important to look at narcissism from a continuum, from a spectrum disorder. So we all have some narcissistic traits on the low end. And then as people have higher and higher traits, they move towards the other end of the continuum. The other end of the continuum would be a full-blown narcissistic personality disorder. Our statistical manual, the DSM, describes narcissism with nine major traits. And those traits are grandiosity of self-importance, being preoccupied with fantasies of power, brilliance, success, believing they're special, requiring excessive admiration, having a sense of entitlement, being interpersonally exploitative, meaning taking advantage of others to meet their own needs, lacking empathy, which of course is the big one, jealousy or envious of others, and arrogant and haughty attitudes. But what I've really found, there seems to be kind of I would say, a loose interpretation in our culture today of narcissism. People tend to believe it's just someone who's boastful and arrogant and just talks about themselves all the time. And honestly, with my work and what I do, I don't really care about those traits. I mean, those people might be annoying. You might want to stay away from them, right? But I care about those traits that hurt relationships, hurt people, hurt partners, particularly hurt children.
So you talk about the hallmarks of a narcissistic family. So can we talk about some of those hallmarks? And I've kind of picked out a few. You talk about that image is everything. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, the narcissist wants to always project that everything is perfect, that the family is perfect, the all-American family or the whatever culture someone lives in, that, everything is perfect about the family. So it really becomes more about how everything looks than about how everything feels.
All right, what about distorted communication?
Yes, that's a big one that I talk about in the book. There's a whole section on this because sadly, in again, what I call the narcissistic family led by a narcissistic parent, the communication isn't honest. It all sort of boils down to dishonesty. And what I mean by that is there's not just direct communication. You know what I mean? Like, instead of saying, for example, Mandy, sweetheart, would you set the table for me? You know, there will be an indirect comment such as, gee, I wish someone in this family would set the damn table. There are lots of different pieces of the communication patterns. There's gaslighting, there's projection, there's blaming and shaming in the way people are dealt with each other. There's triangulation, where instead of talking directly, we talk through someone else, hoping to get back to the other person. There's a distortion of reality. There's a complete lack of empathy, which is the biggest thing. Lots of inconsistency and judgment and criticism.
So you also talk about children lack self-trust.
Yes.
In what way?
In a family led by a narcissistic parent, children aren't encouraged to express their authentic, true feelings. And when they do, those feelings are often gaslit. There's a message, don't talk about your real feelings. Again, going back to, we have to pretend that everything is perfect here. And so children's reality gets messed up. So people grow up in these family systems. They might have feelings. Everybody has feelings, obviously. But instead of trusting that, they're not used to having their feelings validated or acknowledged. Mm. So what happens is, a lot of my clients will be like, well, I feel this, but should I feel this? Really? I'm really angry, but should I be angry? You know, is that valid? Mm-hmm. Rather than just trusting what is there so they can manage it and deal with it.
This is so good. What we're talking about is so important. All right. So I, as family therapist, know about this, but I think this is really kind of shocking if you're just a normal person and you can have empathy, mm-hmm. that a narcissist really doesn't have empathy. So can you kind of talk more about that?
Yes. Isn't it interesting? Because if you are a person who is empathic, it's hard to imagine. It's almost like there's this piece in the narcissist's brain that isn't there. It's like missing or something, mm-hmm. you know, where they just cannot tune into the emotional world of other people. Because whatever happens, it just reflects back on how it affects them, rather than being able to get in the shoes of someone else and say, I wonder what that feels like for them, and how can I tune into that?
Goes into part two of the impact of narcissistic parenting. And you talked about delayed emotional development. And one of the reasons that you said is because you're focused on a parent's feelings rather than your own. Can you talk more about that?
Yes. Narcissistic parenting tends to present in either engulfing or ignoring, which kind of seem like opposites. But with the engulfing narcissistic parent, the child never really gets a chance to develop who they are, because they're constantly being told what to think, what to wear, how to dress, how to wear your hair, what to believe in, how we act. So that pushes out that time for the psychic energy of the child to be developing. The child that is ignored, the other type of narcissistic parenting, that child is scurrying around constantly trying to get the love and approval and affection and attention of the narcissistic parent. And therefore, again, the psychic energy is taken up, so they're not able to focus on themselves. So we do find the emotional development delayed, not arrested. The narcissist's emotional development is arrested. So I'm talking about something different here, but it's delayed, which means that in our recovery as adults, mm-hmm. we have to go back and do some emotional catch-up, particularly in the area of individuation.
So it's very good news that you can heal from some of the impact of this narcissism. So you talk about impaired trust. So can you talk about, in terms of narcissistic parenting, why does that impair trust?
Because children need to know they have someone they can lean on. Someone that will take care of them, that will have their back, that will be honest with them. And the child that grows up with a narcissistic parent doesn't have that. they're constantly walking around in a state of hypervigilance where they're not sure when, you know, there's inconsistency. They're not sure what's going to happen next. So they learn that maybe one day that parent's there, the next day they're not. It all depends on what's going on inside the narcissist. So it creates this atmosphere where they don't learn that, you know, this is just a given. That, like in a healthy family, it's just a given that, you know, your parents know everything and you can lean on them and trust them and they'll take care of you.
So you talk about separation and individuation. Maybe explain what that means. And then, so how do you separate and individuate if you've been in this kind of family?
Yes, to me, the separation and individuation is a huge part of the recovery. And as you know, Colleen, it typically in normal psychological development starts early in life. You know, it starts at about age two, really, like when the little one starts to say no. And then it progresses slowly, you know, throughout their elementary years, high school years, and later development. So that they're slowly kind of moving away psychologically from the dictates of the family and thinking about who am I? What do I believe in? What do I want to do? Now, this all gets crunched in the narcissistic family because they're not, it's too rigid. They're not allowed to be their authentic selves. So later in life, when people come to treatment for this particular issue, step two of my five-step recovery program is we have to go back and work on how do we psychologically separate the dynamics now of the family you grew up in. Who are you? What is your value system? What do you believe? What's important to you versus what you were told as a child?
But it's a very worthy process, very worthy.
And some people misinterpret, I think, separation and individuation to believe that we mean geographic. And it doesn't mean, you know, if I live in Denver, if I move to Alaska, it'll all be, I'll be individuated because it has nothing to do with geography. It's all our inside emotional, psychological work.
Yes, absolutely. So what do you mean when you say reparenting the wounded child within and becoming who you truly are?
The child that grows up in this kind of dysfunctional family usually ends up with post-traumatic stress disorder or complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which means that there is a wounded, traumatized child in there that needs to be reparented. So reparenting that child is really learning how to do self-care and tuning into your own needs and taking care of your own feelings and really learning how to comfort and soothe that wounded child that wasn't soothed before, wasn't calmed, wasn't taken care of.
What could happen if you were parented by a narcissistic parent and you really didn't do any work with that because you didn't know about it? You just didn't know you could do some work on it. How could that impact you parenting, being a parent?
Unfortunately, a lot of people tend to parent the way they were parented if they don't have their own awareness. So let's say you were raised in a narcissistic family and there was no role modeling of empathy. And you may not know how to do empathic parenting, which if you think about it, empathy is the antithesis of narcissism. So I always tell people if you grew up in a narcissistic family and you want to stop this legacy, this generational legacy, do empathic parenting, which means everything starts with feelings unless it's an emergency.
I've also seen that if you haven't done some of that work, then sometimes it's hard. It's like the child can take control and the child can take up a lot of space. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, your child almost becomes, you kind of can replicate that relationship that you had with your parent, especially with the distorted communication where you feel like I have a lot of moms tell me, well, I don't really want to, you know, tell her no because she gets so angry. Or like that fear that they might have had with a narcissistic parent kind of can be somehow passed down to their children.
And it takes me right away to thinking about What I think is really important to establish is a parental hierarchy, not in a dictatorship, certainly. In a healthy family, there's a hierarchy. You know, the parents are on the top and the children are underneath for the purpose of the parents are in charge. And the parents are there to shine down on the children their love, their guidance, their teaching, their nurturing, their empathy, their validation. And if that hierarchy isn't built, then children don't feel safe. They may be acting out more, actually asking for some of that hierarchy.
Now, I know that you came up with 11 ideas or suggestions or tools about how not to raise a narcissistic child. I would love to hear some of those.
Yeah, I'll just run through the list. And then if you want to hear more about any of them, but the first one, the most obvious, is to teach empathy. So, you know, using empathic parenting, I think, is extremely important.
Okay, I'm just going to pause because this is all too rich and wonderful. That's like a million-dollar question. How do you teach empathy to a teenager? Because my moms are moms of teens and tweens. How do you do that?
Two major things. One is you model it and yourself. And the other is when you're dealing with that child, you start with feelings first. So here's an example. Like, I'll just use a personal example. When my daughter was in junior high, let's say, she wakes up one morning and says, "I'm not going to school today." I'm like, "Well, are you sick?" "No, but I'm not going to school." Now, if I wasn't doing empathic parenting, I would jump right into the rules. I believe in education. You have to go to school. You're going to school. End of discussion. Get ready. Doing empathic parenting, then you're going to go to the feelings first. So you're going to say, "Okay, honey, you do have to go to school, but what's going on? I want to know why." And she says, "All of my friends are wearing mascara and I don't have it and I don't feel pretty." And I'm like, "Oh, that changes the whole picture here." So I'm like, "Oh, well, okay, that's easy to solve. We can run to the drugstore and get mascara. You can borrow some of mine. We can fix that real quick."
That's wonderful. All right. What's the next one?
Showing children that you value yourself. Because people who grow up with a narcissistic parent have an ingrained "I'm not good enough" message. But we can inadvertently pass that down. So the antidote to that is, you know, we work on valuing us as adults, as parents.
So how would you do that?
I think just knowing how to be in tune with yourself. So you know, when you're tired, you get to rest. When you're hungry, you get to eat. When you don't want to do something, unless it's, you know, a dire thing for the family that has to be done, like pick a child up or something. I mean, you listen to yourself. You really value self-care.
Yeah, and dial down the drama. I talk about that a lot of moms feel like they're mother machines. So yes, so I think that's awesome, because if you don't value yourself, then you're modeling that for your daughter, but then your daughter could not value you either.
Yes.
And I see this in a lot of divorce situations where the mom and dad got divorced. Dad is the narcissist, which you know all these cases, where he's doing everything he can to throw mom under the bus and devalue you. And so the daughter does, you know, and I hear these moms, you know, just feel for them because it's a really tough situation. But yes, especially in those situations that you value yourself.
And the not good enough message is a hard one to get rid of. And, you know, treatment to really work on turning that negative message around.
Right. And that's a wonderful thing that you just said, is that if you don't value yourself, you're not stuck with that. You can change that. And you will love your life so much more.
Absolutely.
When you start to value yourself, life gets fun again.
Yes.
All right. So what's your next one?
Value the child as a person, not just their accomplishment. Hear a lot of people talking about my child, the soccer player, my child, the ballet dancer, my child, the piano player. No, that's good. I mean, we still want to, you know, obviously value their accomplishments, but more important, value them as a person. Like, I love you for who you are. acknowledging characteristics about their personality that you love, treated your friend today, kindness you showed towards your grandfather today. I love your smile. I love your sense of humor. Like things about their characteristics as a person.
I also see a lot of teens and young adults in my practice, and they'll say things like, my mom doesn't love me. All she cares about is my grades. All she cares about is if my room is clean, and there's so much pain with that. I understand how moms, we can get stuck in kind of being task oriented. But this is, if you see the importance of your child needs to feel valued by you.
Your accomplishments are just, frosting on the cake. It's great. I'm not saying don't acknowledge those, but so much more important to value them as a person.
Yeah.
Because the child of the narcissist grows up feeling valued for what they do, not for who they are.
That's such an important point. Yes. These are great. Give me another one.
Model accountability and teach accountability. One of the big characteristics of narcissists is they're never accountable. It's always someone else's fault. They'll never say they're sorry because it's never their fault. So you model it. When you've done something, you say, oops, I screwed up. I am so sorry. I did this. I shouldn't have done it. You teach it. You model it. You help them do it. You teach them how to do it. And you teach them that it's okay to make mistakes. We're on a human journey together, all of us.
Yeah, this is so important. I remember with my daughter when she was middle school or high school, I thought, oh my gosh. I mean, I was so angry with her about something and I gave her 98% of like it was her fault. But I would always look for at least 1%. What's my fault? What is my fault? What can I take ownership of? And when I would own that, she would go from this fight mode and she would say instantly, take accountability for her part. So it's exactly what you're saying. All right. So give us another one.
You have to be careful about not teaching entitlement. So this is kind of a big one on how not to raise a narcissistic child, because what happens to all of us is we just love, and most of us, we love and adore our children, and they are the most important thing to us. But we have to be careful with that so we're not teaching them that they're more important than other people. Get special privileges at school or at the grocery store or at the ballet lesson or whatever, that, they're important and lovable, but they're not more important than other people.
This is so important because I think we're in a culture that is about kind of being the superstar and being above somebody.
There's everyday examples we can work on ourselves as parents not to model entitlement. I'll just say the one I have the hardest time with myself, standing in line. Nobody likes to stand in line. It doesn't mean you're a narcissist if you don't like to stand in line. But I mean, you can use it as an example to show your children, like, we're not more important than the next family down the street. I mean, if we're in a line, we're in a line.
Yeah, no, that's really great. So can you give me another one?
Another one I think is really important is consistency. Keeping things consistent in the family is important because in the narcissistic family, it's so unpredictable. Using consistent methods and consistency in routines, I think that's extremely important. And in that just leaks over a little bit into another issue we see a lot with siblings in the narcissistic family. Teach your kids, and it goes back to empathy also, teach your kids to be supportive of each other. How do you connect with your sibling? How do you show empathy to your sibling? How do you be supportive? Because in the narcissistic family, you're pitted against each other with your siblings. And there's competition and who's better. And, so teaching that at a young age so they know how to do that as adults.
That's really important. All right. What's another one?
I think I talk to clients a lot about this one, looking at your own value system and making sure that you've established a value system, because it's so easy to get caught up in the fast pace of life and be task oriented. And we just have this, this, and this to do and, go, 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 do, do, do. But if you know your value system, meaning what you believe in and how you want to treat other people in the world, you know, what your basic purpose is, then you can use everything in parenting as a teaching moment. Say, well, this just happened. I don't like it. I'm going to have to do whatever. But what's my value system about this? What do I want to teach my child in this particular situation? So we can use everything that happens as a teaching moment. But it takes time. It does take a little, like, you know, 3 steps back, like do a little thinking. So we're acting and not reacting, if you know what I mean.
I had a guest on my podcast, and unfortunately, I can't remember her name at the moment, but she talked about this herself and really writing out your values. So I think this would be a great exercise for you moms. Write out your values. Like, what is important to you? Like, what do you want your kids to learn? Which values? It's not only your values, but important values. And then what this woman was talking about is creating mantras that support that. So you're kind of intentional about what you say to your kids to reinforce those values. Do you have any other kind of practical ideas for how moms can figure out their values and how to teach those?
Well, I think now I do have a values exercise in my books that people can do, but I think looking at your value system just in general would be to look at things. What do I want my child to grow up and be like as a person? What kind of people do I like to be around? What are those characteristics? What do I believe in just in general in the world? And your values about integrity and honesty and success, even, you know, is success all about making money, all about, you know, what is success to you? Like many of us have said to our children, the goal isn't to get the A. The goal is that you've given it your best.
Any others that you have?
I think the only other one I would mention is to be authentic. Because if we look at the perfect family image, the rules of the narcissistic family are don't show your feelings. Teaching kids that it's okay to have feelings. It's okay to be real. It's okay to talk about those feelings. Now, what's important, though, is also learning how to manage those. If we're teaching kids, express your feelings, you know, we have to be hand in hand with how do you manage those feelings.
That is true. Yes, that authenticity part is really important. And I also hear kids all the time say things like, my mom just wants me to be perfect. She's so perfect, which is not a compliment. And I know you talked about that in your book is, the narcissistic parent tends to be very critical and judgmental. Can you talk about why? I think that would be good for moms to hear that.
Well, the narcissist, even though they can cover it with grandiosity and I'm so great, deep down at the core is a very fragile ego and a very insecure person. So narcissists tend to put other people down, judge and criticize to make themselves look better. So when you're around a person who's narcissistic or has a high level of traits, they're constantly talking about other people.
So let's say there's a narcissistic parent and then the kid kind of gets kicked off of the basketball team and it's not making good grades, that can make a narcissistic parent extremely angry, not because of what's going on for them, but because that makes them look bad.
And this is why it takes us back to, you know, value your child as a person, not accomplishment. Because, you know, kids are going to have successes and failures. That's just part of life.
Right. I always like to talk about the little one who's learning to walk. We don't ever expect them to walk perfectly. We expect them to fall down. And we even cheer them on when they fall. Just keep going, keep going. And, you know, it would be wonderful if we approached our tweens, teens, and young adults in the same way. Because I also spend a lot of time with moms who have emerging young adults. Those years are crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of, because now these kids are trying to manage their whole lives on their own for the first time.
Yeah.
So that is definitely not going to be perfect. These emerging young adults walk, fall, walk, fall. But we can still cheer them on.
That's right. And I think sometimes it's important to share with our kids that I don't know about you, Colleen, but I can certainly say for me, I have probably learned the most in my life from the mistakes I've made. So we can take a weakness or a failure or a mistake with a child, again, using it as a teaching moment, and say, you know, what can we learn from this? Wonderful. Let's take this as a teaching moment and plant some things with that child that they can learn from that. So they feel like it's a win.
What last advice do you have for the moms listening?
If you grew up in a family with a narcissistic parent, I would say recovery, internal work, recovery. It's an inside job, but it's so worth it so that we don't pass that down to our children inadvertently. We can do that inadvertently if we haven't done our own recovery. So that I think I'm all about recovery.
So I don't know if these statistics are absolutely true, but probably in the ballpark, it's true that 95% of us is in the subconscious and it's pre-programmed. And so 5%, we are intentionally living our lives, and 95% of us is this kind of pre-programmed part of us. So, okay, who knows if it's 95% or whatever percentage, but what I think is true, which is I think why you're saying recovery is so important, and I agree, and practice for a long time. That's what we do. We find out what's been kind of put in there, what's been programmed. And once you can name it, then you can do something with it. So I always joke with my clients because I'm in Houston and the nearest body of water is off of Galveston. But the water in Galveston is like you can't see through it. Like you put your hand under the water, you don't see your hand. It's just muddy as can be. So I tell my Houston clients, it's like kind of that unconscious is like Galveston water. You don't know what's in there until you kind of bump into it. If you get really hurt by your child, or if you get really offended, or like sometimes these feelings will rise up in us, or this rage that has nothing to do with our child. And that might be a hint that you bumped into something in your kind of more unconscious part of you.
Yes, because people can be triggered that they haven't resolved, which again goes back to recovery is everything.
Yes.
And when we're triggered, we react like a knee-jerk reaction versus act from our value system.
So recovery really helps you become the person you want to be, and you can be freed from all these things that you just don't like about yourself. Like it's the happiest job in the world for me to help people get free, and I'm sure it's the same for you. So, how can moms get in touch with you, and where can they find your books?
I think the best resource is my book website, which is just willieverbegoodenough.com. And that website has everything on it, how to contact me, all our social media links, the books. That's the easiest, willieverbegoodenough.com.
Okay, I will definitely put it in the show notes.
All right, Colleen.
Well, thank you so much.
You are welcome. I enjoyed talking to you.
And me too. This concludes this week's episode of Power Your Parenting Moms with Teens podcast. If this podcast has been helpful, I would absolutely love it if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. This makes it easier for other moms like you to find the support and encouragement they need. Also, my award-winning best-selling books, Dial Down the Drama, Reducing Conflict, Reconnecting with Your Teenage Daughter, and my newest release book, Dial Up the Dream, Making Your Daughter's Journey to Adulthood the Best for Both of You. You can find both of these books wherever books are sold. And you can find other great resources and contact me at ColleenO'Grady.com, and that has 2 L's and 2 E's.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.